Hey, before we dive into today's episode, I just wanted to give you a couple of quick notes. First of all, if you listened to the last episode on the three stories every brand needs to tell, you're going to love the serendipity of this because in this episode, my guest Jimmy drops his list for stories that every brand should be using. And we did not plan that, but clearly we're both big fans of a good framework and making it more accessible for business owners to think about how they can use storytelling in their business. So I thought that was really fun that we had like a similar framework to talk about, and we did not plan that. I just thought it was really funny. But where he takes it even further is through his custom GPT. We talk about this in the episode called The Brand Script Genie. There is a link in the show notes for you to try it, and it's really good. It's fun. So even if you haven't used ChatGPT before and you've been curious about it, this would be a really great way to get started. And I just wanted to say to anybody who hasn't used it before, don't shy away from it. Because you haven't, like when you click on the link, it'll take you to ChatGPT and it'll just, open the GPT if you have an account. And if you don't, it'll just prompt you to create a free account. And then the way that he's set it up is that it gives you prompts of exactly what to put in. So you're not going to get in there and feel lost. So anyway, I just wanted to say that because I think a lot of times people aren't really sure where to start. And this would be a really great way to get in and experiment with this a little bit. So, as always, if you want help with your brand strategy or content ecosystem, you can also connect with me and book a free discovery call through the link in the show notes where you will find all of the goodies and resources that we talk about in this episode. So, without further ado, let's get into it. You've mastered your craft, but does your brand truly reflect the magic of what you do? Welcome to The Vignette Effect. I'm your host, Raquel, and this is your guide to building a radiant brand you love and that works for your business. Here, we get real about all things branding, visual storytelling, and the tricky business of being a creative entrepreneur. We'll dig into shaping your brand's identity, creating visuals that connect, and using it all to bring clarity and purpose to your marketing without overthinking. It's time to craft a brand that's not just beautiful, but memorable, and have fun doing it. Let's dive in. Hello, and welcome back to The Vignette Effect. Today, I'm joined by Jimmy Gibson, the VP of Brand Communication at Thrive Agency, a TEDx speaker, and a former professional magician. With over 25 years of experience in marketing, Jimmy helps business owners craft messages that not only capture attention, but drive real results. Blending storytelling, strategy, and a touch of stagecraft, he transforms bland branding into memorable, profitable communication. Whether he's working with franchise leaders, solopreneurs, or multi-location businesses, Jimmy brings clarity, curiosity, and conversion to every conversation. This is so much of what we love to talk about here on the podcast. Jimmy, I'm so excited to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Great. Well, thank you, Raquel. Looking forward to it, and I'm sure we're going to have some interesting back and forth on some of these topics. So
I
thanks for
think
having me.
so, especially given your interesting start with magic. Can we just start there and talk a little bit about, take us back to your background and where this started to grow into marketing, from magic to marketing?
Well, it's kind of a twisty turny path, but we can start back when I was about 4 years old. I remember digging up a little membership card a couple of years ago, going through some boxes, and it was a membership card to Merlin's Mail Order Magic Club. And I started doing the math on the date of that card, and I was like, how did I get interested in that when I was 4 years old? That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And then for my sixth birthday, I got a magic kit, like a whole kit. And I don't know. I guess it was just one of those things that I was interested in. It stuck. Through middle school, I was actually performing shows for my friends' birthday parties. Like their parents would pay me to entertain at their kid at my friends' birthday parties. So I was like, wow, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of organizations around the world. There's one in particular that was in my area in Virginia. And so I would attend the meetings, and my parents would drop me off if I couldn't drive. But then after I got my license and got a little bit older, there was a gentleman in the club that worked at an advertising agency. And he said that he had a client, a pretty large international client, that was looking for someone to do promotional shows. And would I be interested? And of course, you know, I'm like, absolutely. And so I started doing promotional shows for that client, and that lasted for 16 years.
It's a long time.
I know. When I was trying to decide what I wanted to study, because I knew college was in my future, I just thought hanging out at that ad agency was pretty cool. So why not do that? And as I got deeper into it, I realized these are sort of dual careers where the messaging required for marketing is kind of like a magic trick and how it's structured. Yeah. And I was just fascinated. I started working at ad agencies out of school and kept performing magic. I did theme park shows, corporate shows. I had a corporate show at the MGM in Las Vegas. I opened up a theater in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I was on the Food Network with the cake boss, Buddy Valestro, with a tour that I had that featured magic in Savannah, Georgia. But all the while, was still doing marketing stuff. And I guess it's just sort of the lens that I see the world through professionally and personally.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you, you know, kind of if there was sort of an aha moment of seeing how the two related, but it happened so simultaneously. It's almost like, how could you not? I mean, that's just then the lens that you see everything through. And to have gotten into the ad agency space so early on is really just serendipitous practically, because like when you said that you started doing this and went on for 16 years. I mean, a lot of us don't do anything for 16 years until much, much later. So you really got ingrained in that very early on. But was there a point where you started realizing in your marketing, hey, there are things that I'm doing in magic performances that really apply and intentionally applying that?
Yeah. So I started out as a graphic designer and was always curious about why are we doing this for a client? Like, I would ask the owners of the agency, and I guess they kind of got sick of me asking. They're like, why don't you go talk to the client and ask them why we're doing this? And so, you know, as we study branding and marketing and layout and, you know, I had some good mentors from the marketing side of things, design side of things. And they would always tell me, you know, whenever you're doing a layout, something has to be the hero. Is it the headline? Is it the picture? Is it, what is it? And then, you know, as you go down the page, you want to make sure you structure the conversation with the potential customer in a way that helps them understand more about the product. And I, like in my head, as I, you know, I don't speak multiple languages, but there are people that I know who speak multiple languages and they say that they listen and then they have to translate that into their native language. And there's all this stuff that goes on in their head. And so as I'm thinking about the structure of an ad or a message, I'm translating that into a magic performance. And I'm saying, well, of course, there's some signature point of a trick. There's something that you want to communicate. So the hero of the trick is, has to be communicated, right? That the audience has to know what's going on. And then the sequence of the trick has to walk them through to the ultimate conclusion of whether something vanishes or whether something, you know, appears or transforms. It's the same thing. And so I guess I just always, as I sat down to do a project, I would ask myself these questions, and they were performance related questions. And that's how I did my work. A couple of years ago, somebody asked me about exactly what you just did. And they said, could you teach me how to do that? And I was like, how in the world am I going to do that if you don't have experience in magic? And so I developed this framework called the Magic Script, which is basically brain-based. And I can tell you more about how that got developed. But I think, yeah, you're right. It was something that I practiced and rehearsed on both sides of magic and marketing. And then when I had to reverse engineer it, I had to put it in simple language, but it was something that I always did. So I don't know if that exactly answers what you were going for, but that's just how I think through the process.
It does. And I think it brings up this really interesting point of frameworks and how somebody like you, or even somebody like myself, how you have to translate how you do what you do and come up with say, ideas and ways to write about things and make that available so other people can understand the thought process in a way. Because otherwise you're trying to sell this idea for, say, ad copy or something on a web page, and everybody's going, okay, well, why are we saying it like that? And so as you were talking about this translation, I thought, well, yeah, you see everywhere in marketing, well, here I have this framework, and people will kind of say, oh, it's another framework. But guess what? Everybody wants a framework, because otherwise they don't really know where to start, understandably. And so it is really interesting, and why everybody has their own, because it is drawn directly from our own experience. Yours happens to be, you know, from performance, and the next person's is going to be just with their, you know, whatever way they came up to say, like, I have to figure out how to say this. Now I have to figure out how to explain to someone else how I came up with it and help to give them the tools to come up with something like that on their own, which we're gonna talk about yours even more, because you've taken it to another level and gotten into the world of AI and all of that. But first I wanted to ask you something else. As you're talking about even creating, say, the copy on a website page or something like that, and, you know, this whole idea of the performance and magic, there's also this very strong case for storytelling, which is something else that comes up, of course, a lot in marketing, and that people tend to, you know, have a little trouble at first wrapping their head around when it's new. So what would you say people, first of all, maybe get wrong or misunderstand about what storytelling means from a marketing perspective?
Yeah. So I love the topic of storytelling. I know Donald Miller is still very popular for his mm-hmm. approach, which is story brand. Mm-hmm. That all came from his training with a screenwriter called Robert McKee, who wrote a book called Story. It's a very thick book. I've read the book. It's an awesome book. He does training, and I think Donald Miller went to that training. Mm-hmm. Before Robert McKee was Joseph Campbell, who had a number of books about The Man with a Thousand Faces. And he really reverse engineered what is story and why do we love a movie, or why do we get involved in a novel, and how do we engage with that experience, and how do we remember things? And so if you think about the history of the world, the ability to write and communicate through the printed form is really just a blip compared to storytelling across a variety of cultures. Doesn't really matter who. I mean, the printing press, I can't remember the exact date that Gutenberg invented that, but it, the way that things were communicated were through the spoken word. I did a podcast last week, an interview by a guy who is from Senegal, and his grandfather was sort of the head of the community that he was a part of when he was a kid. And that's what the grandfather remembers, right? And so this tribe in Africa, he wanted to keep that going because it's been sort of lost in mm-hmm. our culture today as far as storytelling goes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you think about, you know, if I tell you I went to the grocery store or something and you say, well, how did that go? You're naturally going to fall into a storytelling structure, right? Well, I needed to get this loaf of bread, so I got in the car, and I usually go down this road, but oh my gosh, it was blocked. They were doing some work on the water pipe, so I had to turn around and go this way. Mm-hmm. And then I get to the store and I'm like, oh my gosh, they don't have my brand. I can't eat this with this ingredient because of that reason or another. I get to the cash register and you're not going to believe it. This is the 10 items or less line. And I know that person in front of me has got 15 items. What are they thinking? And so I finally get up to the counter and I pay, and I, you know, then the whole trip back home. And so the resolution is I got the bread, but all of this stuff in between. And so anything that we do is typically falls into that structure. And so I think there's something that happens when we talk about marketing language. People think they have to put on some other hat or get in some other brain set that actually goes against our natural desire for things to fit into a story structure. And so mm-hmm. they've actually done brain scans of people, and they'll put data in front of them, and they'll tell them about, you know, pie charts and facts and spreadsheets. And like one little piece of your brain lights up when you're hearing facts and statistics and things like that. But when somebody hears a story, like your whole brain lights up, mm-hmm. and it engages all sorts, you know, all the senses, how rich the storyteller is able to bring in sight, sound, smell, touch, all of those things. There's also something called neural bonding, where the person hearing the story bonds with the person telling the story. And that's another connection. And we can get into some more of the science related to the magic script. But I would say anybody can learn to tell a story. Any of the sources that I just mentioned are great. There's a super guy by the name of Matthew Dix, who wrote a book called Story Worthy. Maybe we can include that in the show mm-hmm. notes.
Yeah.
He has another book related specifically to business. And I think there's just a couple of principles. You know, when we talk about a marketing type of story, it can't be like the cool story you tell at dinner. That yep. is a funny story, right? I mean, it kind of has no point. There has to be some structure that gets you from where you are to where you want that customer to be. And I would say the biggest thing in business storytelling is there has to be a change from where we are at the beginning to where we are at the end. Anyway, I know you've got some thoughts. You've studied that a lot. I can give some more tips on how to get started and what to think about, but I would say overall, if you're not talking in story structure related to, there's probably four stories, and I'll stop after this and we can dig in. There's four stories a business should tell, and they're not necessarily right out of the gate. We might get into that as well, but the founder story, people are very interested in mm-hmm. how the company started. The about mm-hmm. page is usually the second most visited page other than the homepage on a website. Mm-hmm. The next one is the purpose story. And that is really, what are you trying to achieve as a business? What are you committed to? What is your, you know, if it's not about the money, what's it about? That's very interesting to people. Mm-hmm. There's research to say that, especially in younger generations, they're interested in purchasing from and working for companies with a strong purpose that aligns with their values. Mm-hmm. The next one is the transformation story. And I just mentioned a little bit about that a minute ago, with what is the change that's going to happen when somebody engages with your business. Are they going to go from stressed out to relaxed? Are they going to go from heavy to lighter? Are they going to go from weaker to stronger? Are they going to go from poorer to richer? You know, all those types of things. What is the transformation story? Which is a little different than the customer story, which is actually a testimonial of somebody who has interacted with your company and gotten the transformation. Even if it's transactional, it can still be transformative. We could go on and on about this, but I'll stop and take a breath.
Well, and I could too. I'm a big Donald Miller fan also. I don't know if you have read, he's done an updated StoryBrand 2.0, which I have not read yet, but I'm curious to read it. One thing I always appreciated about the way that he broke everything down is that he, instead of like our friend Joseph had 12 steps and Donald put it into 7, which thank goodness, because really 12, yes. you know, in modern day, especially trying to apply it to marketing, that would be a lot. So I love the four types of stories that you pulled out. I think it is really helpful to just everything that you're doing. And part of the brand strategy is having all of those types of stories. It really helps to inform the marketing message when you have those underpinnings of what it's all about. And then something else that I always found as one of the biggest takeaways from StoryBrand is not story specific, but just the idea that the emphasis is that the hero of the story is your customer, not you, and you are the guide. So if you take those core stories that you talked about and put it through the lens of, you know, speaking to you instead of we do this, you will achieve this sort of language, you already have pretty strong makings for brand communication. Do you agree? I mean, I always loved that was just such a strong point about the hero is your customer.
Yes. I would say there may be scenarios where the brand needs to be the hero. If somebody is in a terrible situation and they just need somebody to come swoop in mm-hmm. With their cape on and save the day.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, at Thrive, we have about 1,000 active clients. We've been around for 20 years. And if I had to generalize, I would say what we have to consult with our clients on is stop talking about yourself. Everybody is interested in their own problems and what they want. People buy for their reasons, not yours. And yeah, there's a time and a place to say we're a family-owned business. We've been around for, you know, 30 years, But in the initial stages of a conversation, it has to be all about the customer. And you've got to know your customer inside and out. You've got to know where their pains are, where they're, what are they seeking, what's going to make them happy. And yeah, I mean, I would say, what is the reason in an email marketing campaign that we have coding that allows us to insert the person's first name? Because that's the most attractive thing to somebody is to hear their name or to see it in print. And so you have to think about that when you're, instead of speaking to the masses, the more you can speak to an individual and their particular situation, then you're going to have something light up in their head that goes, oh my gosh, they're reading my mind. How do they know this about me?
And oh yeah.
Connection.
And it really resonates with them then, and they remember it, which is all the things then lighting up. But I also agree that there's a time and a place. You don't only talk about the customer. There is the time and the place when you're telling the origin story, when you're talking about the things that, you know, your business does. It's sort of a nuanced blend of those things. And I, 1,000 clients is a lot. So it's a big agency that you work with. You've got, you know, 1,000 different client accounts and probably having a lot of similar conversations in the beginning about some of those things, about how to write your homepage and have it focus on your customer and, you know, kind of walking people through that. And I'm sure that you have a lot of people under your roof that are experts at doing that because you would have to. I mean, how many people are in your agency?
About 175. So quite a lot.
Yeah. And so when it comes to like some specific examples of like storytelling that you've seen work really well for a brand and maybe something when it falls flat, what's the differentiator there of storytelling that works and when it's like not working?
Yeah, I think a couple of components to a story that make it interesting. Again, it can't be about you. There has to be some sort of, and my brain is kind of going here because I want to make sure I explain this succinctly because it could go on and on. But there has to be somebody who's the hero. Usually people can't keep track of more than three characters in a story. And so you need to think about who are the characters in a story. If you're trying to tell a lot, you're going to overwhelm people. And so a character could be your product or service. And then there has to be some sort of stakes involved, right? So most of a story, so if we just look at movie structure, you're introduced to the hero at the beginning or the main character, and there's something that sends them on their way, right? And they call that crossing the threshold, an inciting incident. And then most of the movie is them getting closer or further away from their goal, and that's called conflict. And so depending on the story, and you see this a lot in these home renovation shows where there's manufactured stakes that this project has to be done by noon on Friday. We just have to get all this done. Well, otherwise there wouldn't be any emotion or people wouldn't stay hooked to go, did they get it done by 12 o'clock on Friday?
Yeah.
Even though that was a meaningless time frame. Yeah. And so you have to think about what are the stakes in the story? And then are you adding enough curiosity to the conversation so somebody keeps listening? And so there's a term in, you know, a performance called sitting on the edge of your seat. Well, why do they call it that? Because you're literally sitting on the edge of your seat. You're not checking your phone. You're not talking to the person beside you. You're waiting for the next thing to happen. And so typically the good stories involve principles of what I just covered. And the other ones, you know, I talk with a lot of people about giving a keynote speech or how to structure communication. And the old adage is tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. To me, that sort of ruins the surprise and ruins that curiosity and anticipation. Mm-hmm. And so again, I go back to the magic script and I go, where are you inserting curiosity in the process? Why should they continue to watch the video, read the next paragraph, schedule an appointment with a salesperson, whatever the case may be? So I would say some of those are the initial ones. There's some classic triggers that I think would be helpful. Perhaps I think maybe when we talked earlier, we talked about the five finger method of storytelling, and I can go into that a little bit, which would give people something to sink their teeth into.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask you too, this kind of is all sort of on the same page of things, but I mean, you work with a range of clients, businesses of all different sizes, but there's also always this idea of pulling out what makes like a personal brand or any kind of brand memorable. So it's like you have the storytelling, and then you have what actually makes them different. And then, you know, you can see where the average person is like, it is really nuanced, that they're like, how do I go about pulling these things together and make it memorable and not make it sound robotic and all of those things. So I will leave it to you to start with whatever method, or if you want to jump into like your magic GPT, however it makes the most sense. Like, how do people start to figure out what's distinct about their brand voice and start turning that into storytelling that they can actually sink their teeth into and feel like they're creating something meaningful?
Yeah. Well, something that you carry around with you every day, your hand, I'll use my left hand. If you just start with this approach, you'll have enough content and enough things to fill up a website or fill up a blog or whatever the case may be, restructure your sales funnel. But I'll start with the pinky. And so if you think about your brand, whether it be the company brand or your personal brand, I think we all remember that pinky promise you gave on the playground as a kid, right? You interlocked fingers and that was like it. When you made that promise, you kept it. So what promise are you making to your customer? What is your point of view related to that promise? Why are you determined to make good on that promise? And so that can come from all sorts of directions. If you manufacture something, why did you choose the materials? Why do you go through the certain process that you do? If it's a service-based approach, are you known for your customer service? Are you known for, doing some sort of evaluation of the situation before you get started? Why is that important in your delivery process? And so just think about the promise that you're making. And that could be at all different levels within an organization. So it's a great topic for team discussion. Mm-hmm. From a leadership perspective, if you're the one running the business, what are you promising that you're going to stand behind as an organization? Is it a guarantee? What about a work environment? What about your internal culture? So all those things, each one of those can be a facet of your brand. The next one, especially, I don't think it's the same in every culture, but the ring finger is where you wear your wedding band, right? And so you might think that's a promise too, but actually there's a number of things involved in how you got that wedding band on your finger, right? There was that initial attraction. There was that passion and commitment to that other person. But there was also a courtship that happened. You probably didn't ask that person out, or the person probably didn't say yes on the first date. So what is that sequence that introduces them to your brand? And then how do you court them along the way to get them more involved with your brand? And so that can involve a number of stories related to that. The next one is the middle finger. So I got to be careful. I'll keep all my fingers up. I won't put that one down by itself.
I'm following along.
But the middle finger is not vulgarity. It's actually defiance. And so who is the villain to your brand? Who is out to get your customer and guide them in a direction that they should not be going? This is a classic storytelling structure, right? So it could be a person. It could be an ideology. It could be another company. I would say be careful sort of trashing other companies. If you have enough context clues, people can probably figure out who it is. But you've got to stand for something. And if you truly believe your product or service is the right choice for a prospective client, you need to save them from that villain who may be the worst choice they could possibly make. you know, this comes to mind. If you have some sort of fitness or weight loss program, you might, the villain might be a fad diet, right? Mm-hmm. Or unhealthy eating, or, you know, something along those lines. So that's very rich with the ability to jump into story structure. Mm-hmm. The next one is the pointy finger. And a pointy finger has a couple of things. I think we all remember the posters of Uncle Sam going, I want you.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So you're pointing at someone specifically. Well, who are you pointing at? If you don't know anything about your customer, then you kind of have nothing to say, right? Mm-hmm. You can't talk to a group of people. You have to talk to one person. And then we can also use that finger to beckon them or invite them in to a brand conversation. And so that's a great storytelling structure where we talked about the customer story. So you could say, this customer, Raquel, was in this situation and they needed this to happen. And so we were able to help her out with this situation. And so that's another story framework that is easy to fall into. And then the last one, of course, is the thumb. And that's the universal symbol for thumbs up. Everything's good. But if you turn it upside down, that's bad. So related to your brand, what's good that your client should follow and what's bad that they should not follow? So we've all seen, you know, various memes on the internet, do this, not that. So that could relate to a whole series of stories. Mm-hmm. It's also what sort of thumbprint are you leaving on your client after they interact with you? It's interesting. I have three sets of nieces and nephews that are twins. And they can open their phones with their, they can open their phones with their face, face ID, but they can't open it with their thumbprint. It's unique to every person. So as far as a personal brand goes, what's unique about you? What are the combination of skills that you bring to this? And then as a company, what is the makeup of your company that makes you unique? And then how are you measuring what's working and what's not working? So I would say that five-finger approach is rich in getting someone started and could branch off into hundreds of stories that could be told.
It's true. You could take any of those and use that as the framework for any sort of content, blog posts, emails. I mean, I feel like I know that when I'm working with clients, a lot of times they really just kind of get stuck at that coming up with ideas for content. And it always goes back to, well, have you taken the time to map out, you know, some of these brand foundations? Because from there, like you said, you kind of never run out of things to talk about. And even with like the thumb too, it reminds me a little bit of, you know, to bring Donald Miller back into the conversation, there's, and it's been a little while since I have looked at the actual framework, but there's a part toward the end, I think it's maybe even in the last step, it's what you will transform into and attain, but there's also this what to avoid. So I feel like the thumbs up and thumbs down is also, here's what you can get. And it's a little bit of the do this and not that. And it's also the like, here's what you get and here are the pains that you can avoid, because psychologically, we can get into some of the psychology of some more of this now too. The psychology of, you know, it's so interesting that people will often go to more lengths to avoid something they don't want than to get something that they do want. Or there's the experiment of, you know, same kind of thing. Somebody is more likely to take more action so that they don't lose $100 that they already have versus getting $100 other dollars. So the psychology around all of this is really fascinating as well. I'd love to hear some of the other psychological tidbits that you have. And I will just say, I know sometimes people get a little bit like, ooh, sales psychology. They think it's they feel like it's tricky. And I'm always saying, no, I mean, the psychology and persuasion is all about finding a way to communicate with integrity what really matters. It's not about tricking people. Yes, there are those people out there. Of course, we're all trying to avoid them. We all should be trying to avoid them. But sales psychology and the psychology of persuasion and all of that, I think, you know, if you can learn how to communicate in that way, you're really finding how you can connect with people with the thing that they do care about. But I would love to hear your thoughts on that. And any other psychology you want to add?
Well, I would venture to say if we went through our bookcases and browsing history, we'd probably be landing on many of the same things.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think so.
which is kind of cool. So let's get into the brain chemistry of some of the structure of how you can just very simply communicate in a successful way. And again, it could be applied to a presentation that you're giving. It could be applied to a social media post. It could be applied to anything really, a sales conversation. But there are natural chemicals that are released, neurotransmitters, that happen when we interact with somebody. And so the first one is, and I'll kind of lay out the magic script, I think it would be helpful. Mm-hmm. The first part of that is the connection phase. And you really have to get rapport with your audience. And I'll speak in magic terms, and then we can translate it into marketing terms. So the magician walks out on stage, maybe there's a deck of cards in his or her hand, and says, I'm sure y'all have probably seen this before. How many of you in the audience have one of these at home? And you're going to get most hands in the audience raised, right? Everybody has seen a deck of cards, has mm-hmm. a deck of cards at home. They're familiar mostly with the four suits and, you know, mm-hmm. 13 cards within that. And so that's just a simple area of connection. When that connection happens, there is a release of oxytocin, and that's just the neurotransmitter of feel good. I like this interaction. It's going well. I don't see a threat, right? And so that can last for however long it needs to last. The next part in a magic performance, I may point to somebody in the front row and I'll say, what's your name? Oh, my name's Raquel. Raquel, I want you to think about one of the cards in that deck. Are you familiar with the four suits and, you know, the various cards? Oh, yes. I've played cards all my life. Okay, great. I want you to think about that. Well, all of a sudden, the rest of the audience is going, wait a minute. Usually the person has them pick the card and they pull it out of the deck. They're just thinking about, like, what is going to happen? Mm-hmm. So that's a curiosity activator, and the neurotransmitter of dopamine is released. And so we've all heard about dopamine with social media addiction, air quotes. Mm-hmm. It's not really the addiction to social media. It's the expectation of a reward. And mm-hmm. so you're expecting somebody to like that post, share that post, comment on that post to give you that satisfaction or that reward or positive reinforcement, right? And so what happens in a magic show? Curiosity is piqued. You're not sure where this is going. So you're anticipating some closure to it. And so then if I were able to name that card with you just thinking of it, then all of a sudden the audience is like, oh my gosh. So the whole path makes sense, right? I have a deck of cards. You're familiar with the deck of cards. You mm-hmm. think of a card, I name the card, and that's a release of serotonin. And that's just, oh my gosh, everything is right with the world. That was really cool. I feel.
And how do you do that?
How do you do that? Yes. Yeah. Yep. So I think that's just a really simple three-step structure of making sure you take the time to connect, you activate some level of curiosity, and then you bring it to a close. And if we bring it into a marketing state, I would say one thing that's missing from that conversation, and there's been books written about this, but if you were to classify all magic effects, and so I'm talking about floating somebody in the air, that would be levitation, making something disappear. I just demonstrated an example of mind reading, making something appear, a transformation, one object changes into another object. So in the world of magic, you could classify each one of those into 13 basic effects, right? And so it's kind of cool that in marketing, and even in business language, we often hear, just wave your magic wand over that. Make it go away by magic. Do your magic thing, right? And so we're familiar with that, but you first have to decide, what is the magic that you want to perform for your audience, right? And that would be your prospects or your customers. And so I had some, unfortunately, some plumbing work that had to be done this weekend, and which I hate doing plumbing work, but I was not going to call a plumber.
Nobody likes having to do plumbing work. I feel for you. Yeah.
Yep. On the weekend. So let's just use that as an example. And so I would say if you're a plumber out there or any kind of home service person, most plumbers would instinctively default to a vanish effect, right? We want to make clogs disappear. Well, that's just momentary. And yeah, that's a great trick because that satisfies an immediate need. But what if I said something like, we see the warning signs before your drain backs up, so you'll never have to deal with an emergency again. But let me rewind us here. Hold on just a minute. Oh yeah. So that was an example of how to reframe a conversation about making something disappear. So what I'm saying is we see the warning signs. It's actually a prediction effect. So getting ahead of myself here, but if
I'm tracking though, I'm with you. Okay, I like that switch.
Okay. So if I wanted to activate the oxytocin or the connection, I may say something on a website or on a phone message that would say, why do clogged drains always happen right before guests arrive for the weekend or just as you're running late for work? So I'm not selling anything. I'm just saying, hey, we've been in your place. We know exactly what you're going through. And so as the receiver of that, you're going, exactly. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know my pain, right? Mm-hmm. And so now we want to crank up that curiosity. And so you may say something like, what if you never had to deal with plumbing emergencies again? Mm-hmm. Well, in your brain, you're having to go, okay, what are you going to do? You're going to put a plumbing guard at my front door, and every time I have a problem, they're going to rush in and fix it, or there's going to be some remote monitoring system. Like, I'm interested, right? I'm sitting on the edge of my seat. And so now I'm ready for that resolution. Give me the reward. But what have I been waiting for? Well, with our 20-point pipe health check, we predict problems before they happen and give you a plan to stay worry-free. And so if I then follow up with, could we come out and do a free inspection of your pipes? What is somebody going to say? They're going to say, you understand my pain. I don't want to ever have to deal with this again because the problems always pop up at the worst possible times. And if you're going to guarantee that my entire structure of my pipe system is going to be worry-free, I'm in. Sure, come on out and do the free thing.
Yeah.
And so as part of that, you know, and you mentioned the GPT, we have a great opportunity now to have AI help you in your business. And so I actually went through the process of creating a custom GPT. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's basically just a closed environment that you teach whatever it is about your company that you want it to learn, and it doesn't go out to the internet and get confused and hallucinate. You put documents in there, you tell it what you want it to, act on, what is the interaction that you want it to have. And so I basically just fed in those 13 effects. I fed in the sequence of connection, curiosity, and conversion. And then it basically just walks you through and asks you questions about, okay, what kind of business is this? Do you have an effect in mind or do you want me to pick one for you? What are you writing? Are you writing an email? Are you doing a voicemail for your phone system? Are you doing a social media post, that type of thing? And so
awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I think when you can use AI to help you in that way, it ends up being really cool. So yeah, I don't.
Yeah. Well, and I think the GPTs are really, it's really brilliant that you've done this too. And I'm excited to try it and have people try this as well. Because I think the risky things we'll say about, you know, people sort of jumping into something like ChatGPT or any other sort of AI tools that are accessing a lot of different resources, especially if it hasn't been trained on your voice and those things, is it can be just a black hole of who knows what. You could go in any direction, and it doesn't always give you really, without giving it good direction, it doesn't necessarily point you in the direction that you want to be going. And it's this kind of free-for-all rodeo. So having something like a framework, a GPT, something that is created to get a specific sort of outcome for a business or for a personal brand, or, you know, for even like putting together a story, a particular piece of marketing or whatever it is such a great way to do it, because, and I'm sure that you probably have experienced this quite a lot also through Thrive Agency is, you know, you start talking to somebody and they'll say, oh, well, I started, you know, using AI to do this. And they kind of have this very generalized, broadly sweeping, maybe not 100% correct kind of ideas about things. And they're like, see, I just did it on AI. I'm like, okay, let's just dial it down a little bit and get detailed and kind of go through, because you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to sound like everybody. You don't want it to be watered down. You don't always want it to be searching the entire history of the internet for some random thing. So do you have your clients using this? Are you using it to do work for your clients? Like, how are you using the GPT? I would love to hear some oh wow moments maybe that you've had with it.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the frustration that you demonstrated, and you know, obviously you have a deep knowledge of how to interact with it. And I think when people start to use it, they get very excited, but it's really at this point, nothing more than a bad mind reader. Mm-hmm. People are yelling at it, why are you so stupid? Because it's stupid. Mm-hmm. It is trying to predict, based on all of the data that it has, what response it should give based on what you fed into it. And so the more time you spend giving it information and context for what you're trying to achieve, the better result you're going to get out of it. But again, it's not the easy button. You can't just have it, you know, write your entire website for you. And then the other thing that you have to understand is, and we'll talk about ChatGPT because I think that's probably the most familiar to most people. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other models. It's very nice. It's friendly. It does not want to be divisive. It wants to be politically correct. It's not going to be able to tell your founder story, your transformation story. It's not going to be able to inject emotion, all the scars and struggles that you went through. If you want something that is rich in texture, you can use it as a starting point for an outline, but don't rely on it to give you that. And, you know, who knows mm-hmm. what it's going to be in a year. It's moving so fast. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as what we use in the company, we have created custom GPTs for clients to help them understand how to interact with it and how to better use it. We do have writers on staff, and I would say we don't work with any client and use 100% AI generated content. It's all human guided content. Mm-hmm. And I would say in the worst case scenario, it's probably 20% GPT and 80% human. Mm-hmm. And it could be for idea generation. It could be to lay out what you said, a content calendar based on the history of the brand. We have clients that have certain vocabulary, tone of language. You have to train the GPT. And then once you get that GPT trained, it can recommend various topics or ways to approach things. I sort of treat it as a beginner intern that I can bounce ideas off of, right? Mm-hmm. And it does help you kind of expand your thinking on things if you don't have people sitting in the same room with you. I wouldn't say there's any gotchas other than when we work with a client, especially on a web project, and they say they're going to write the copy and it comes back and it's absolutely no question about it, written by ChatGPT. I mean, there's certain
phrases. You can tell.
Yeah, you can tell. Yeah. You know, with the algorithm now, Google has really leaned in on this EAT, EEAT mm-hmm. acronym, which is expertise, experience, authority, and trustworthiness. Mm-hmm. And the sites that are going to make it through this new wave of AI are the ones that demonstrate all of those things, which you can't get out of a large language model interaction. So yeah, those are the things that we have to have some tough conversations about. And I will say I have been on a group. We actually do a group interview with all of our new clients, our new team members. We actually put them all in a virtual room and we ask them all the same question and we go, it's a very strange, but very smart way to interview people.
Yeah.
And we have had, without a doubt, people answering the interview questions through their interaction with ChatGPT on an interview. And so I think as people become more aware, people are going to call out brands on their use of it. I was speaking with a potential client the other day. They're not a client yet. And they said that he was telling me, he was the owner of the company, that his team had cloned his voice and they were sending out voicemail messages as if they were coming from the president through those cloned voice messages. And so I've cloned my voice. I've made an avatar of my voice. I'm just playing around with it to see if it's passable. My wife heard it. She goes, "That doesn't sound like you at all." I played that for some other people at work and they're like, "Yeah, that's kind of weird." So I would say we have to be careful just in a magic, as in a magic show, if something doesn't quite look right, you know, the, you know, magician is hiding something, you're going, "I think he's got it hidden in that other hand." The same thing's going to happen with brands. If they can smell something or hear something that's not quite right, you're probably going to have to do some explaining. And so I would be careful with turning over too much of your process to AI at this point.
I agree. It's such a helpful tool. And I think there's also, you know, a lot of people who are super nervous about using it. And they just hear things like, you know, that if you type one word, it's, you know, takes 5 gallons of water or something. And like, that's also not true. And, you know, so I want to, you know, continue to have some conversations even here on the podcast about AI and people using it, because I think we could go on for quite a while about all of that. But I am totally with you on this idea that it's a really useful tool and it's not going to take the place of, say, a copywriter on my team or something like that, but it certainly can get you started and further ahead by helping you plan out some of the content topics, doing some quick research. It is good at, you know, pulling up some quick research. But what I find so fascinating about the whole introduction of AI in general, and then I want to get back into your GPT, is that the more that people use it and the more that we hear, you know, brands leaning into it and it, you know, supposedly taking jobs and all of those things, the more that you realize, the more AI we use, the more human touch we need to make it work and to make it worthwhile. And so whenever I'm working with somebody who wants to get into using AI, I'll say, you know, when you start, especially when you first start and you're giving it prompts, you're going to give it such a detailed prompt that you're probably going to find that you can practically come up with something on your own. So in a way, it's a really good exercise in doing that. But let's just say, you know, you want to go through the whole exercise writing something with AI. When you give it this really detailed information, it will give you something. But then, as you noted, you still have to go back through. And if it speaks to anything about your experience, your brand experience, details about a product, details about working with you, it's not going to have any of that. So you always are going to have to go in and put those nuanced human touch pieces that make it real. So there's a way to use it for people to get started. So if there are people listening who haven't really ventured into it yet, and they love the sound of this GPT that you created, and just, you know, AI in general, maybe saving them time, like, what would you tell people about how to get their feet wet?
Yeah, interesting. So I've been playing around with AI, specifically ChatGPT and some of the other models, but I started on ChatGPT for about the last 2 years. And there are all sorts of image models that are out there. Actually, ChatGPT's image model has gotten a lot better than it used to be. Midjourney is very popular. We see a lot of advancement with video. Still not quite there, but you know, some impressive stuff. There's actually been some movies that have been created with AI video, but I would say just on the basic sense, my wife used to call it that. She said I was having an affair with my girlfriend, ChatGPT, because I was playing around with it so much. And then she started to ask questions about it. And she said, "How could I use this in my work?" And so we just had sat down and had a conversation. I think that's the first place to start is like, what are some repetitive tasks that are not going to destroy the brand of your company or not going to, you know, get you in trouble with your team, that type of thing. And so analyzing data is a great one. You can upload spreadsheets, ask it to tell you what's different about those two spreadsheets. I mean, I know there's functions within Excel to do that, but
I wouldn't even know how to do that in Excel. Right. So if it was somebody like me, I'm like, I don't want to be in Excel. I love, that's a great solution. Yes, please keep going.
So my wife works for an association management company and they do a lot of communication related to the meetings that they have. Right. And so they have all of these conferences that they go to. And so she had it structure a table and you can tell it, I want you to structure a table. I want you to give you the schedule, you know, here are the data points. Here's when the meeting happens. Here are the things that I want. And so it'll create that table for you. Mm-hmm. My older brother is actually an electrical engineer and he actually brokers deals with people who want to build a data center and the power companies that are able to supply that power to generate all of the AI that you and I are talking about right now. And so when you said, yes, if you say thank you to ChatGPT, you're wasting all this energy. Again, I could have my brother come on and go, no, that's not really the case. Mm-hmm. So I said, David, you're not even well-versed in AI. You're doing this for data centers all the time. So we had a situation where we were together for a couple of weeks, about a year ago. And so he goes, well, I want to just tackle one thing every night. And so again, I just interviewed him. Like, what do you tell, walk me through your day. What do you do on a daily basis? And so through this process of getting funding for these data centers, they have these public hearings. And so he had all of these YouTube videos that they broadcast these public hearings on YouTube. And he said, I have to sit down and it takes me 5 hours to summarize all of these meetings as meeting notes that I give back. And I said, well, here's the interesting thing about YouTube. It has a transcript. Cut and paste the transcript. Have it do a summary of this meeting with the key points. Tell it, you know, don't go out on the internet, just use this. And his eyeballs got so big. We were working separately in separate places when we were out of town. He said, I tried that today. You just saved me so much time. You would not believe it. Mm-hmm. And so the information is there, but he took himself out of the equation. It is good for tasks like that. And now he calls me all the time and says, hey, here's something that I did. The other thing I would say is whatever you start to play around with, be sure you know enough about it so that you know if it's doing the right job or not.
Yes, that's a great tip.
Because if you just take it at face value, you're going to have egg on your face big time if you hand that over to somebody. Mm-hmm. Because you will catch it out all the time. And you say, I ask you to do this. You did not do this. And that is actually not the truth. Oh, good catch. You're right. Let me reframe that in a different way. Mm-hmm. And that's just the nature of where it is because it is a really bad mind reader and it is trying to please you and it's trying to put the information in front of you. So I would say those are a couple of tips if people
want. I think that's really important for people to understand though too, because it's not always going to give you correct information and it's not always going to what you said is absolutely true. But I think, like you said, if you're feeding it a script of something, it is really good at, you know, analyzing and categorizing specific information. I have done something similar, and it is really time saving to say, here's, you know, 3 hours worth of recordings of interviews from clients, like, give me the key takeaways, give me this, give me like whatever, you know, and put it in a table. And all of a sudden you have a spreadsheet of, you know, really pretty good information. Did it miss some things? Probably. If you don't have enough of what you need, maybe you need to go in and listen to some more, but it's kind of give you a really good starting point for, you know, for things like that. But with the, it being sort of the people pleaser, the you pleaser, it is. I mean, it's part of its job. Even if you say, oh, you know, give me, you know, tough love, it's still going to kind of kiss your bottom. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, It's gonna, yeah, I mean, it's kind of hilarious. And you're right that it is just where it is right now. So still evolving. So if somebody would like to try your chat GPT or, play with some GPTs, like know more about this, what do you call the framework, your magic framework?
Magic script.
Magic script. How can somebody use the magic script? And how would you best use it?
Well, I would say it is designed for marketing conversations. And again, it could be an email, it could be a blog post, it could be whatever you want it to be. I will send you the link and you can put that in the show notes.
Perfect.
It's not something that I can read off the link to.
Yeah.
It will take you into ChatGPT, so you do have to have a free account. If you don't have an account, then it will just ask you to sign up for one, so it's not a big deal. And there'll just be a little start button at the beginning, and you just hit the start button, and it will start to ask you questions. And I actually programmed it to have a personality as if it were a magic genie granting you a wish. And so it's going to be kind of snarky. It's going to
I love
have
it.
some comedy to it. I think I ask it to a cross between Robin Williams as the genie in Aladdin, and I put in some other comedians' names, and but
Love
then
it.
it also has to be smart. So it has a unique personality, which I think hopefully will be entertaining as you get through the process, and would love anybody's feedback on it. If somebody wants to connect with me after they use it, just I'm on LinkedIn a lot. I'm producing a video every day, Monday through Friday on LinkedIn. So just hit me up and tell me you heard our conversation today, and would love to schedule time to speak with anybody about their challenges related to that, or we can message back through DMs or whatever.
Fantastic. Yeah, I will put all of your links and the chat GPT and your LinkedIn and contact info and all of those goodies and all the books that we talked about today and all of those things will be in the show notes so everyone can follow up, can read the books, try the chats, get in touch. And I have just been slowly working my way back onto LinkedIn where I haven't been spending a lot of time. So I will be sure to share some of this there too. We can have a conversation in the feed on LinkedIn as well and kind of keep it going because I would love to hear the kind of results that people get and trying the talking to the genie. I really love that you gave it the personality.
Oh,
So
yes.
thank you so very much for your time and your expertise today. This has been so fun. I feel like we could probably talk for a long time about many different tangents that we touched on today.
Yes. It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.